Welcome to the American Slang Podcast, where we will explore language and culture in different regions of the United States. Slang is a type of informal language that's typically spoken in a certain area or by a group of people. Culture is dynamic, language is dynamic, and in this podcast, we will explore the connections between them and the way new words and expressions emerge in different places in America. Welcome, everyone. In today's podcast, we're going to talk to Paige Poole about Alabama's culture, history, and language. So I met Paige through work because we're both virtual educators through the Department of State's English Language Programs. And I had heard her being interviewed on a podcast in Spanish, and I just loved everything she had to say. So I thought I have to invite her to the American Slang Podcast to talk a little bit about her identity and her story. And I think she has so much to share with us today. So I hope that you enjoy this podcast. If you're interested in culture, diversity, language, then this is a great episode for you to listen to. So let's get started. One last thing before I forget is that I'm doing a series of webinars with some guest speakers, and the next one is on March 14th, and we're talking about East Coast versus West Coast culture. So if you go to my website, you can sign up for that webinar, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Nice to finally meet you. This is exciting.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah. I find that this is almost as exciting as meeting virtual friends in real life, right?
It's yes. I was looking at your state of Alabama, and I realized that I've probably driven through it on the way to spring break in Florida or something like that. But I don't, I have family in Mississippi. It looks like Mississippi's to the west. It looks like Georgia's to the east and Tennessee's to the north, and Florida. Yes. It also borders with Florida. So it looks like a beautiful state. Like, you have alligators there, it looks like.
We do in the south.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that Alabama's a pretty unique place. I feel like it is undervalued and definitely not given enough attention. Just something I find fascinating about Alabama, going back to this idea of like Alabama is undervalued. Alabama is known as the Amazon of the U.S. And so I know NPR did a write-up on this, but Alabama has the most diverse river system in North America, and is number 5 in the U.S. for its biodiversity. And it's one of the greenest states still. It has, I think it's over 70% of the state is still forested.
Yeah.
I mean, as you probably know, when you ask students in class, you know, to like, where do you want to travel in the United States? They never say Alabama, right?
No,
like that's
no.
never
New York,
on their radar.
California. Yep.
Miami.
Yeah, Miami. Alabama. They're like, Alabama? Where's that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the capital city is Montgomery, right?
Yes, although it's not the biggest city. And if you go to Alabama, no one from Montgomery, hate me if you're listening to this, but you're probably not going to go to Montgomery. You'd go to Birmingham, which is the biggest city and had kind of like, I would say Birmingham, Huntsville, Mobile has some really cool historical places to visit. And then obviously you've got the Gulf Coast that's like beaches, beautiful beaches.
Wow.
But yes, city-wise, like Birmingham, Huntsville has the NASA Space Center that's pretty cool.
Oh, neat.
And
I'm sure there's so much about the civil rights movement that you could learn about. I'm sure there's lots of amazing history with the civil rights movement.
Yeah, there's the Civil Rights Museum in Birmingham. And actually in Montgomery, you can go to Martin Luther King Jr.'s house that he lived in when he was there. And that is pretty, that's pretty cool. That's probably worth the drive.
Yeah, I would say so, definitely.
Yeah.
So what was it like growing up in Alabama? I'm wondering, you know, what kind of things you did as a, you know, growing up there. Did you grow up in a big city? Was it a countryside kind of?
So I grew up in a small town outside of Birmingham. It's definitely within like the Birmingham metro area. It's about 20 minutes driving to downtown.
Oh.
But a very small city called Hueytown, which also no one ever knows about. I think it was.
I'm going to have to look it up on the map for sure to get some images.
Yeah. I think it was established in like 1960 as a city, and I don't know what the population was when I was growing up, but it's about 16,000 now. I always tell people, like, growing up, there were no big chain stores. Like, we had chain restaurants, a few of them, right? Like Taco Bell, McDonald's, Burger King, Captain D's. But there were no like Walmarts or like any of that, probably until like 2006 or seven, maybe. I definitely was already living at Alabama in the dorms, the University of Alabama, when some of those things happened, to the detriment of our small local businesses, for sure.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But then you kind of get more small town stores, small town life, a more intimate kind of feel with your city and the people. I mean, it's kind of like everybody knows everybody kind of feeling.
Growing up, I would like go, I'd be in the grocery store or be somewhere, and people would come up to be like, "Oh, you must be Jacqueline's daughter." And I'm like, "Yes, I am. Who are you?" So, yeah, or like my grandparents own a small gift and frame shop, and so people, also know me through them. And so it's definitely the kind of everybody knows everybody, or if you don't directly know somebody, you know who they are through somebody that you know. Definitely that, but very calm place. If there are any NASCAR fans listening,
I'm
we are
sure there
famous
are.
or known for drivers like Davey Allison, Neil Bonnet, Red Farmer. They're all from Hueytown.
Wow, how interesting. So there's a car culture there that's pretty strong.
Yeah, people like to highlight that, and some of the like local restaurants. I don't know if they still do now, but like one we used to go to called the Iceberg, which this may be, I've been told, living, I now live in West Virginia. People say this is a very Southern thing, but like, do you know the concept of a meet and three?
No.
Okay, so in the South, you have restaurants that are known as meet and threes. And basically, these are restaurants where you go in and they have, let's say, a list of like three meats and like 10 to 15 vegetables. And so most people would get a meat and three vegetables. And so you call them meat and threes. They're the best, they're amazing. I love them.
What would
If
be
you're
the
ever in,
vegetable choices? Like you could get greens or corn or black or peas or.
let me tell you could get anything from creamed corn, macaroni and cheese, that's a vegetable in the South, candied yams, green beans, lima beans, butter beans, black-eyed peas, collard greens,
Fantastic.
squash. A lot of people do like tomato and okra, fried
Oh,
okra.
yes. Now I see why people loved it because there's so many options for the vegetable options. If you
smashed
go to the
potatoes.
Midwest, you get to choose potatoes, a really bland salad, and like corn. Like there's like three options.
Okay, now if you go to a meet and three, I feel like you're gonna get some pretty solid choices. If you're ever in Birmingham, for sure go to Nikki's West. I think it's probably the best around at the moment.
Oh, wow. Is that just like an Alabama thing, the meet and three, or is it something in the South, what you would say?
I honestly can't say for sure, but I feel like it is at least Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, and probably northern Florida, like in the Panhandle, where it's like on the border with Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah, I want to go.
Yeah.
I love Southern food so much. Like with my grandmother growing up in Mississippi, we would often go down to the South and eat the best food in the world. So, yeah. And speaking of food, just because I want to ask you about the idea of Coke. Like when someone says they want a soda, like in I guess is Coke, does that represent any drink you want? Like Coke, it could be.
So it did when I was younger, and I know that especially like in generations before mine, it was just kind of like a way to say you wanted a soft drink. But I think if I speak from like my generation and probably those that have come after, I don't think it's used that much anymore. Now, I could be wrong on this. I haven't lived in Alabama as such for the last 13 years ish, maybe 14 years. But it did at one point, just kind of like, in some of the northern states, you'd say like pop, right?
Yeah, exactly. We would just say pop. And God, okay, so your southern accent is very, like, I don't really hear it. Did you have a stronger accent growing up there? And then it sort of like,
I definitely had an accent. And I think people are a little disappointed when I say I'm from Alabama and I don't have like a heavy southern accent. But my coworkers in Colombia, who some of them were from the US and some of them were from like England and Canada, they would say that it really came out after I had been home for an extended period of time. So like I
Oh,
would, you know, go home for
right.
2 or 3 weeks at, you know, Christmas or the winter holidays, and I would come back and they were like, oh, you can tell you've been in Alabama. But yeah, I think just living abroad for the past, 12, 13 years, I think it just kind of, I don't know, faded away. I don't know.
That's what happens to a lot of people who live in different parts of the country. They grow up in the South, and I know, like, my mother grew up in the South, and then she lived in Iowa for so many years that her accent disappeared completely. But
Yeah,
there
I
are
will
certain
say.
words that she would say with a Southern accent still, you know.
Okay. I was about to say, I know, this is not really accent related, but in the South, I'm not sure exactly which states. I can say Alabama for sure. We use double modals, and I wasn't even aware of this until I lived in Colombia. I was working on a curriculum project with a coworker from the Isle of Man and a coworker from outside of Toronto in Canada. And we were working on something, and I said, I don't even remember what I said. And they were like, what? What did you just say? And I was like, what do you mean? And I thought they were talking about like the content of what I said. And so I like repeated it, and they were like, no, like, you can't say that.
They're
And I
like,
was
that's
like,
grammatically
why?
incorrect, kind of.
You're using double modals. And I was like, what are you talking about? And, so they made me aware of that. And in the moment, I was kind of like, oh, I never knew this. So then, being the person that I am, I like did a deep dive into like, what are, you know, where did double modals come from? And today, I actually embrace them and feel that they are a very important part of like my Southern heritage. And it's something that there's a lot of studies on because they actually mean very different things than what you can express by using singular modals. Like if you say, we might could do this, that's very different from saying we
That's a
could
double
or we
modal.
might do this. Yeah.
We
And
might
there's,
could. Okay, so that's a double modal. Yeah, I definitely have heard that before in the South.
So any of those are like we might would, might could, might should. Those are all like
So
very
it's a way to
different.
suggest doing something.
And it adds a bit of like I think a little more hedging than you might get with other modals. So like if you say, well, you might should think about that a little more, I'm not like telling you you should think about it a little more, like you might should. And I don't know, I'd be curious to talk to someone that studied this more if that's like related to Southern hospitality or like the Southern, like wanting people to feel comfortable and like avoiding, kind of direct confrontations and things of that nature. I don't know. It's a theory I have.
And for people who don't know what hedging is, it's like softening, right? Softening the language a little bit. Yeah, that's really fascinating what you're saying about might, should, might, could. And I love the fact that you're kind of owning it as like, this is part of my linguistic identity. And it sounds really beautiful when you say it. Like, I love hearing that being said. You know, it's like, oh, that's what's so great about some of the Southern accent in general. It's just like musical and sing-songy, and you just want to hear it and just soak it in and
For sure.
I know you haven't really told us too much about the kind of work you do, so maybe you can fill us in. I know that, we met through the virtual education program, so the virtual educator program through the US State Department. So we're both virtual educators working with, I'm working with students in Mexico, and your students are in Brazil, right? And you also work in ed tech. You have an app.
So I'll just give you a kind of the short version. But I am an English language educator, by profession or by, you know, that's my academic background. And I've been working in that area for about 17 years. I started in the US in public schools. I continued working in England while I was doing my master's, working with adult refugees, Spanish and Italian kids who were doing language summer camps, and Chinese students who were hoping to study at UK universities. And then spent 11 years in Colombia, in Barranquilla, as a program coordinator and assistant professor, also English language, at the university. And then, in 2022, I moved back to the US after, I'm trying to think, I 12, 13 years abroad. My
Wow.
wife started her PhD here in Morgantown, West Virginia.
Wow. It's so amazing how it's kind of like this, the paths take us to so many different countries and places.
Something I think that is incredibly rewarding, and I know a lot of people get into teaching English because of that. That wasn't my initial reason for getting into teaching English, but I can't say that I don't that part of it. So getting to where you were, talking about what I'm doing now, in 2022, we moved back to the US. My wife's first time, she's Colombian. And I was looking for work, and I think different from a lot of educators out there, I wasn't actively looking to move into ed tech, but that was kind of the job that I found and felt it really aligned with, what I wanted to do. So I started working at Pangea Chat, which is an AI-powered instant messaging app that allows students to learn a language while texting their friends. Pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool.
And then at the same time, as you mentioned, pure coincidence, started working as a virtual educator as well, with the US Embassy in Brazil on a project that I love. Love my students. I've been working on this project since October of 2022, teaching indigenous and minority Brazilians in the legal Amazon region, English. And it's been
Wow, what a
great.
unique opportunity. How incredible.
And that's kind of where I am. Actually, tomorrow I start a new job.
Ooh.
So I'm transitioning, still within the ed tech field, but working with risk teaching, also still AI. I'm fascinated about how AI is, helping, I think, teachers in all sorts of way, and students as well. And a little bit different, this one is BRIS teaching has a Chrome extension
Yeah, I've been trying it
that.
out. You recommended it the other
Oh,
day. I
good,
have it
good.
on my computer.
I
Oh,
love that.
neat. You're going to start working with Brisk teaching. How fun.
It's interesting to I think see all the different ways, like I said, that AI is, coming in as kind of this like super assistant, for the classroom. Fascinating, I
Yeah,
think.
I know. It's so fascinating. Well, that's amazing. That's great. And okay, so I wanted to ask you about your identity and growing up in the Bible Belt as a lesbian, right? I'm just kind of curious because we know that the southern states have this sort of religious angle, and that I guess I'm kind of curious about that. Now, and the fact that you're not living there anymore. So I'm wondering if it's an issue of, just, I guess you've moved around for a lot of different reasons, but I'm wondering if you feel more comfortable and, in another part of the United States now, or do you think you would still feel at home there?
So let me start from the beginning, and I'll work my way towards the end of that question. I think that'll give some better context in terms of like growing up in the Bible Belt. I think I grew up in a very small town. It was very conservative, has I think changed quite a bit since I haven't lived there, the same as Birmingham. But it definitely was, I don't know if this is, maybe this is a good way to explain it, but a very kind of like sheltered environment overall, where you didn't really hear about, even the possibility of someone not being a straight cisgender person. And so for a long time, it wasn't even possible to kind of contemplate being anything other than that. I guess when I was, finishing high school was when I realize, like, hey, the reason that you've never been interested in guys, or, when people ask you, like, hey, do you have a crush on anyone? I would always be like, no, because I never contemplated, like, oh, I can like a girl,
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it's like it without it's like outside of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you don't know what you can have if you don't know that it exists. So getting more at kind of the other part of the question, it was a really there was a really tough period for me when I, came out publicly, which was I'm trying to think. This was my first semester at university, so that would have been in 2006, in December. And that period, I would say, and probably for like the next maybe 4 to 5 years, was kind of a really rough, figuring out how to be who I am, who I was, but also I think a big part of being Southern is like you worry about what other people think on maybe a different level than you do in other regions, because you don't want people to feel bad, or you don't want to feel like you've made someone feel bad. And so I definitely think there's a bit of that involved in like, some aspects of being who you are because you're worried they might offend people.
Yeah, there's like social pressure and community. The community is so strong, that sense of community, maybe.
Yeah, and then I think regarding like feeling comfortable, I do have to say, I did when I was finishing my undergrad, make the decision that I wanted to be outside the US for a while, and while that was motivated by many factors, one of them was definitely wanting to live in a country where, gay rights were recognized, where it was legal to, if I wanted to marry someone, then I could without worry, without worrying about the law impeding that. And so I got a Rotary ambassadorial scholarship through my local Rotary club, and yeah, that finances a master's study abroad. I don't know if it still exists. But you
I
basically
think
choose
the
three.
yeah, the Rotary programs are really strong, right? For study abroad programs.
And promoting, that intercultural understanding and awareness. And so, as part of that, you choose three countries and a university in each of those countries that you would like to study at. And then they make kind of the final, this is where, for whatever reason, we would like to have you study under the scholarship. And all three countries that I chose at that time, I chose them based on the fact that they were very progressive in terms of LGBTQ plus rights. And so those were England, Canada, and the Netherlands. And as I mentioned, I ended up in England.
Fantastic. Did you go to London?
No, so I was actually in Leeds. Leeds, I don't know if you know, it's about 4 hours north. Four and a half hours north of London. It's an industrial city. It was great though. Yorkshire, it's in West Yorkshire, but the whole Yorkshire region is fabulous, beautiful.
Fantastic.
And yeah, that's where I ended up
And
for my
like there, when
master's.
you were living there, did you have certain realizations about Alabama or about the US, or I don't know. Sometimes living outside of your own country, you have the reverse culture shock, right? Or
I don't know that that happened so much in England. I do remember just kind of feeling, like it was refreshing to not have to worry whether my identity was illegal or not, or,
That must have
like
been really
was a,
freeing.
yeah, or like a, political topic, right? Instead of just who I was. And so, in that sense, it was really refreshing. I think on a cultural level, most of it was more related to like linguistics. So, like, I remember going to the grocery store, and in the South, we would say a buggy. And I just really wanted a buggy. And I went up to someone in Morrison's, one of the grocery chain grocery stores there. And I was like, hey, like, where are the buggies at? And, I remember he looked at me and he was like, it's a trolley here. It's a trolley. And I was like,
Like
thanks. Thanks for
he
that
knew. Actually, that's
clarification.
funny that he knew you were talking about the buggy.
I don't know if he
Yeah.
knew like particularly buggy, but I think he knew like, oh, you're American. You don't know that we
Okay.
call these things here trolleys. And similarly, I asked for, I was looking for squash, like summer squash, the yellow
Yeah.
kind of crookneck
Yeah.
squash. And I also asked someone in a grocery store, you know, like, where is your squash at? And he very nice. Proceeded to walk me down the aisle, and as we're getting like further and further away from the vegetables, and I'm like, where are we going? Took me to the drink aisle because squash is like a mix that you can like dilute with water that's kind of offered at like bars if you want something non-alcoholic to drink. And I was like, whoa, like, okay.
Oh, no. So
Yeah.
what do
So
they call it? Something completely different? Squash.
So courgette is what you would call like
Oh.
zucchini.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah. So I think that if there were any kind of like, I'm trying to think if there were any like cultural realizations. And I'm sure there were, just none are coming to my mind
I wonder
specifically
if that just
about.
like this small, like how things are really compact, like in England, right? Like everything is so tight. The spaces are tight. It's really crowded. I don't know if,
So
did you
in
feel
Leeds, I
that?
didn't feel that. Leeds is kind of, there's definitely a city center, you know, that's very like business oriented. It has a fantastic market. The Leeds market is really like well known, the Kirkgate market. But outside of the downtown area, so like around the university, it's actually really green. Like there's a
Oh
huge
yeah.
park and kind of
It's very
the housing.
spacious.
Yeah, you don't feel like, you don't look around like buildings and things like that. It's very green. Yeah.
Oh,
Maybe if
nice.
you were in like a bigger city, I guess, than Leeds, you might feel a more like London, for example. You kind of always feel like you're in the city, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And then, did you meet your wife there
In
or?
England? No, so we actually met in Colombia.
So
Yeah,
after you
ironically.
graduated, then you moved to Colombia on a different project or?
So when I graduated from my master's, I moved to Colombia. And at that point, my wife and I were both working at the same university. But we didn't start dating until 2014. So I moved to Colombia in tr October of 2011. And we
Oh,
kind of like
nice.
knew who the other one was, but we never really like, we weren't in like the same friend circles or like, you know, we had a cordial professional relationship.
And then you just kind of stay there. You ended up
Yeah, I was there from 2011 until 2021, was when July 2021 was when we moved back to the States. But we kept working remotely for our university in Colombia for a year before we, so I may have been off on those dates early in the conversation.
Oh
Sorry.
no, there's no, it's no problem. But nevertheless, I was just curious because you speak Spanish so well, because I heard you in the podcast episode that you shared with me, and I was like, wow, your Spanish is amazing. So it must have just been immersion, and you've probably studied it or.
So I studied in high school. I went to an international baccalaureate school.
Ah, neat.
Yes, I had to take a language. Our options were Spanish, French, and German. I did Spanish for 4 years. And then I studied it at the University of Alabama. My degree was in Spanish and International Studies.
Oh, neat. I have a BA in Spanish too. How cool.
Yes.
Then your master's, though, was in linguistics or something, right?
It was in
Or
TESOL studies.
TESOL. Oh, neat.
But I really think my Spanish fluency was cemented. I did a semester abroad in Bogota, Colombia, when I was I want to say a sophomore at the University of Alabama. And that's when I arrived to Bogota, and after like 2 weeks, I was like, I can't do this. Like, I am going back home. Like, I don't understand anything that's happening. I can't do the readings for my classes. And then I pushed through. You know, I was like, there were no Spanish language classes at that time. It was also very uncommon for international students to be studying abroad in Colombia, given kind of the internal conflict between the government and groups like the FARC, ELN. And so they just didn't have a market for like offering Spanish classes. So I was in, political science classes with Colombian students and,
Wow. High school. At the
yeah,
high school level, how fun.
no,
Wow. True
at the
immersion.
university
Oh,
level.
at the university level. I thought it was when you were a sophomore in high school. No,
No, a
sophomore
sophomore at
in
the university.
college. Oh, okay.
Sorry, I should have clarified that.
Fantastic though.
but yeah, I feel like pushing through that, and then after like 3 months, I had kind of that like, chip change in my brain, and I was like actually able to communicate and understand.
It was like you
And then
pushed
on.
through and just had this breakthrough.
Yeah,
Right? It was like,
so
whoa, I can do
people,
this.
people would tell me, they were like, you get to this point where you don't even realize it happens, but all of a sudden you can just, speak and understand. And I really felt like that's what it was like for me. I don't remember a specific moment. It just kind of happened.
And now sometimes it's like you're speaking one language, you don't realize what language you're speaking, and then you're like, what? Do you ever feel like that? You're just like, what language did I just say that in? I have no idea.
Or I forget words. Like I'll be at home with my family in Alabama, and I'll be like, I don't remember how to say this in English. And they'll be like, how do you not remember how to say something in your first language? Like, how do you just forget that? Like, well, let me tell you.
And just out of curiosity, are there any interesting slang words from Alabama like holla? I don't know if there's some, or do people call it Bama, the state, or they call it Alabama, or do they say it with a certain southern accent? Because when I did the New Orleans episode, she's like, no, we say New Orleans here. So I don't know if the pronunciation of Alabama, if how would you say it? Like,
I think like a good southerner would probably say like Alabama,
oh,
Alabama.
Alabama. Lengthen out those A sounds a little bit more.
Let's see here that but I'm thinking about, I think a good slang that people always find interesting, and I think a lot of people outside of Alabama don't know about this, is in Alabama, football is really, really big, especially the University of Alabama. And kind of the slogan, I guess you would say, for the team is Roll Tide. Have you heard this before?
No, roll
Okay.
tide. No.
Roll Tide. So, like, when you're at a football game, and there's a touchdown, people are going to go, Roll Tide. So, anyways, in Alabama, you will hear Roll Tide, you will see Roll Tide, but it's not only used as like part of Alabama football, but people use it to like say thank you. People use it to say like good job, or like if something good happens, they'll use it as kind of like an exclamation, I guess, of like, oh yeah, like Roll Tide, did you hear that, so and so got a new job? There's
That
even
is
a
amazing.
fascinating, ESPN commercial that you should check out that they did on the Roll Tide phenomena. And at the end of the commercial, it says something like, football is more than a sport, it's a lifestyle. And they use the Roll Tide phenomena to kind of, I guess, explain that or show that.
Oh, I love that. And so it's just like ROLL, roll, and then TIDE, tide.
Yeah, so the backstory on that is, in Alabama there are two main football teams, Alabama and Auburn, and they are rivals. And in, I want to say it was the early 1900s, could have been, I don't know, closer to 1930, don't quote me on a date, but Alabama and Auburn had a game together, and Alabama was the underdog of the game, and everybody had been saying their colors are red and white, and everyone had been saying that Alabama was the thin red line. But they played so well in the game that by the end of the game, people were talking about the crimson tide that had rolled over their enemy. And so from that came this roll tide roll, like keep rolling over your enemy type.
Wow, that yeah, the there's so much history behind this expression too.
For sure.
And it says so much about the culture. So do people kind of sing, is it kind of sing-songy too? It's like roll tide. Like people say it in a certain way. Yeah, like I'm sure it's like a song.
And okay, so I was gonna say, even there are some songs, like Dixieland Delight, for example. I'm trying to think, and they'll play them at the football games, or if you're with people who are Alabama fans, there are moments in the song where people will interject like "Roll Tide, roll" on like the space,
Oh,
the
yeah.
pausing in the songs. So yeah,
Oh, it must be so much fun to go to a football game in Alabama.
it's definitely a unique experience for sure.
Oh my gosh. And just to kind of close out, I have a question. Like, let's say someone comes to the South, right? And they're trying to navigate the Southern culture. And you know, I'm just wondering if you have any tips, like for someone who went to the South, like, and they were staying with a family or visiting, like, what do you think would help them in terms of kind of, you know, entering the culture and being able to navigate a little bit better? Like, for example, like if you go to someone's house, should you take a box of chocolates? Or I don't know, like this idea of Southern hospitality, I know is important, but if you visited someone in the South, what do you think? Like,
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I don't know that a gift is always expected. I would say it's not. It would be like an extra touch of like, oh, like that's incredibly nice of you, you know, or that's like really sweet of you. But I think that people are like more concerned about taking care of you, if that makes sense, like making sure like you're okay. I will say that like good manners are highly appreciated in the South. So
And
like
like saying
greeting and
yes,
thank
ma'am, or
you.
no, sir.
Yeah, so yes, ma'am, and no, sir. Like I grew up in a household where, you know, if you said yes, my dad would be like, yes, what? Like, yes, sir, or like no, what? Like no, ma'am. And so I think that that may be a bit generational as well. I still say it, especially to like show respect to, you know, people who are older than I am. And I think a lot of people still do that, but anything of that nature of just like, you know, showing respect, like showing good manners, I think is going to go a long way in, you know, making, I guess, like keeping, you know, like a good relationship with people. It's very appreciated. The idea of like a warm greeting, you know, when you meet someone, or like if you're going into, you know, like the classroom or a store. I think that's appreciated as well. Yeah, I think that.
Yeah, I think there's a sense of warmth, right? Because sometimes in certain parts of the US, it's very cold. Like the people are cold, or the greetings are cold, or you know. But in the South, people are just so warm and welcoming from what I have experienced.
Yeah, and there's a lot of like, I guess I would call it maybe like layering. So like you being direct can be okay, but oftentimes people like layer directness in a lot of like flowery, warm language to make sure that, you know, the person feels comfortable and like it's not going to be too, you know, tough of a blow, or there is that underlying desire, I think, to not make someone feel bad or make them feel uncomfortable. Even that, you know, it's sometimes like this in the movies, and I think that this is true probably in a lot of cases, but if someone is going to say something bad about you, they're not going to say it to your face. They're going to wait till you're like, you know, gone far away, and probably tell people that, you know, it'll never get back to you type of, I don't know, like
We have
Southern
this
small
expression
town
like
gossip.
she's two-faced or they're two-faced, that kind of idea of being two-faced
Not really
or
that.
not.
No, not necessarily that, but like, for example, I don't know, this is a made up example. This has never happened, but like, if you, I don't know, let's say that we're like in a store and we see someone come in, and I don't know, maybe their outfit is pretty horrible. We might never say anything. We might even tell that person like, oh, I love how you combine those colors, or, you know, like that's a great combination, or, you know, whatever. And then once that person's gone, we might be like, I would never wear that. Like, did you believe what she was wearing? But you would never say that to the person. And in fact, you might overcompensate when you're around that person to make sure that they feel good. Does that make sense? It's like a
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Yeah, there are in some cultures, for example, you could say like, "Oh, you look so chubby. You look so fat," or something like that. Because I had my Vietnamese friend, they would always comment on her weight openly. But
Oh, the
like, I
same in
don't know if in
Colombia.
the South if people comment on the weight, but in the Midwest, people, it's a no-no. Like, you should never say anything about someone's weight to their face.
Yeah, I don't actually know, in the South about that, actually.
Because
I
people
know in
would.
Colombia that was a big thing.
Oh, I was, yeah. Because it
Like
just
you'd see
seems
them,
like
they're like,
it.
oh, it looks like you've gained a little bit of weight. Or like, oh, you're too skinny. Or
Right.
like, you
Everything is
know.
a comment on the physical, how you're looking. But in the US, I feel like in general, like more so than not, people will compliment rather than say something that could be potentially offend someone about their appearance, right? Great. Well, thank you so much. I have learned so much about Alabama culture, about you, about your story, and it's been really interesting. Thank you for bringing up so many fascinating details and sharing with us a little bit about yourself
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
making the stage seem so attractive. It makes me want to go and visit
Yes,
it. I have to try the three meat, the meat and three.
meet and three. Yes. Go
Not
to
three
Nikki's
meat.
West in
Not three
Birmingham.
meat. Meat and three.
No,
I'll go in and be like, I want to do a meat,
no.
three meat or something. They'll be like, no, what are you talking about?
Yes, they'll be like, what?
Okay, great. Well, thank you so
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been
much.
fun, to
Yeah,
talk about
really
all
fun.
this.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this conversation, and this episode was so fascinating. I learned a ton myself about Alabama, and I really want to go check out the amazing places that Paige mentioned. So, thanks for joining us, and I hope you got a lot out of it. Also, you can listen to the podcast while following along with the transcript, and this can be great as well just to pick up some vocabulary and learn, go over the collocations, for example, that came up in the conversation. So check out that. If you go to my website, www.movingenglishlessons.com, you can look at a number of images, visuals, conversation questions. I put on some great vocabulary topics to talk about as well, and I think you'll love all of the complimentary materials that go with this podcast episode. And the upcoming episodes to look forward to. Well, the next one is going to be about East Coast versus West Coast culture. So we're doing a very special webinar on March 14th with guest speaker Glee Lugo. So you can join us and sign up for that. And then also, I'll be doing an episode on passions and hobbies on the West Coast, crochet in the Bay, with our guest Helen, who hasn't joined us for a long time, but she's recorded a number of podcast episodes with me. So I can't wait for you to hear that episode where she talks about some of her greatest passions and hobbies. So we have a lot of great episodes coming up this season. And also, because I'm traveling to Tampa for TESOL Global, I'm going to be, connecting with tons of teachers from all over the USA. So I'm hoping to be able to record a few wonderful podcast episodes. There's some people on the list. I want to bring someone who lives in Hawaii. I want to bring someone who lives in Kentucky, like some other states that I just haven't featured yet. I think there's some great people on the list. So I hope you leave us a wonderful review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, wherever you listen. And just give some support at a, put up a comment on YouTube, for example, and let us know what questions you have, or if there's certain places in the US that you want to learn more about or that you want to be featured in the upcoming episodes. Have a great day, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. See you next time.